current book project related to the talk he's going to be giving today is entitled Shady Detectives, Elegant Criminals, and Dark Avengers, French Crime Stories, 1815 to 1950. He has some current academic articles, Putain de Guerre, Teaching Jacques Tardy's World War I Graphic Novels in Fiction and Film for French Historians from 2014, and Modernism, it was a series, and the piece he was working on is Seminar Studies in History. The general editors were Clive Emsley and Gordon Martel, came out of London Routledge in 2013. So Robin's paper today is entitled The Dark Avenger as Popular Hero, from the Count of Monte Cristo to Chéri Bibi.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In 1844, Alfred Auguste Cuvier Fleury, literary editor for Le Journal des Débats, contracted Alexandre Dumas to write a roman feuilleton to match the astounding commercial success the newspaper achieved in Eugène Sue's Les Mystères de Paris, published over the two previous years. Dumas, who started his literary career as a playwright and had only recently begun to writing novels, was still looking for that breakthrough title, and he hit double jackpot in 1844 with the historical cape and sword adventure novel Les Trois Mousquetaires, serialized in Le Siècle, and Le Comte de Monte Cristo, published in 279 installments, 1844 to 46. For this roman feuilleton, Dumas did not recapitulate the Mystère de Quelques Villes title, an urban underworld formula which proved commercially successful both within France and internationally, as emphasized in Les Bas-Fonds by Dominique. But he did follow Sue's lead by making a prince in disguise avenger the hero of his adventure and crime novel. Yet the Count of Monte Cristo was not modeled on Sue's noble avenger, but his inverse. Sue's hero, Rodolphe, is the prototype prince in disguise, the Grand Duke of Gerolstein, who under a false identity and in costume traverses the underworld milieu of Paris with ease, undetected by its miserable inhabitants. Dumas's Edmond Dantès, by contrast, is a ship's first mate for a Marseille maritime company, later transformed into the mysterious Count of Monte Cristo, who passes incognito among the Parisian aristocracy and financial elite. Count Gerolstein, born a wealthy and insouciant aristocrat, subsequently ensnared into marriage by a conniving and libertine wife, devotes himself as Rodolphe to the redemption of the orphaned street urchin, Fleur de Marie. Dantès, an earnest sailor betrothed to the beautiful and pure Mercedes, falsely convicted of treason and left to rot in the Chateau d'If, commits himself as the Count of Monte Cristo to the financial and social ruination of his personal enemies. Where the narrative of Sue's Les Mystères de Paris operates according to the melodramatic moral opposition of le bien contre le mal, good versus evil with a capital B and capital M, the avenger hero dedicated to social justice and moral restitution, the Count of Monte Cristo unfolds like a contemporary 1001 Arabian Nights, in which a vengeful anti-hero uses his magically gained wealth to extract personal retribution through the destruction of property and the murder of his enemies. Both are justiciers, but not of the same genre. This paper delineates some of the contours of the Dark Avenger, a popular figure in French crime fiction over the course of the 19th and early 20th centuries. As French critics of detective fiction have long noted, tales of crime and its consequences in France during the 19th century were embedded in the serialized structure of the roman feuilleton and roman populaire, having little or nothing to do with the detective stories of ratiocination first introduced by Edgar Allan Poe's Murders in the Rue Morgue, despite the continuing canonical place of that story in literary criticism. Neither do French novels of crime and detection own much to Bertillonnage or the development of police forensics. As the roman judiciaire, or police procedural, constitutes an extremely minor subgenre in France. Once again, despite the canonical status of Émile Gaboriau's Père Tabaret and Monsieur Lecoq in the literary genealogy of the detective novel. In 19th century serialized and popular novels, the enigmas at the heart of crime fictions are more furrowed, dug through and worked over, than solved by logical or scientific methods. The French detective pursues the criminal by sleuthing through underworld haunts, following promising and false leads, and finally ensnaring his nemesis, which in many stories the nemesis then subsequently escapes. Logic and deduction, methodical investigation, solving the puzzle of a mystery hidden from the reader, these hallmarks of the classic detective story are largely absent from the 19th century corpus of French popular crime and detective fiction. So in the absence of such a detective story canon and genealogy, where might the cultural historian of French crime writing find an alternate framework for understanding the development and popularity of the roman policier? Toward answering this question, I've discovered some suggestive possibilities in the early bulletins produced by collectors of roman populaire, founded by amateurs and collectionneurs of mass print publications d'autrefois. These bulletins, appearing from the 1960s forward, are dedicated to once mass distributed imprints from the Belle Époque through the 1920s that were rapidly fading from lived memory. In the post-World War II era, supplanted by a burgeoning mass media culture of movies, television, comics, and American and British popular fiction in French translation. Running against the grain, these contributors to these bulletins, dedicated to a bygone era of the French popular press, are invaluable guides for the cultural historian as latter-day folk collectors, gathering and compiling catalogs of ephemeral mass print culture. Decidedly anti-academic and disdaining literary snobbery, these non-commercial and subscription-based journals appealed to the public not only for readership, but to contribute articles. Emerging scholars of popular genres like historical and adventure novels, romance novels, science fiction, crime and detection, began to use these bulletins as well as an early forum for careful analysis, interpretation, and commentary. In advance of media studies in universities or popular culture journals issued by publishing houses, a counter-criticism to the sanctioned literary canon began to emerge. In an article from the collector's bulletin Désiré, entitled Le roman policier populaire, an obscure contributor, Robert Lamar, proposed an alternate framework to the canonical genealogy of the detective novel. In the place of the narrative structure of the police story, Lamar suggested crime and detective stories in the roman populaire are built around three kinds of heroes: les grands criminels, les grands justiciers, et les grands policiers. In a more contemporary article in Le Rocambole, Le Bulletin des Amis du roman populaire, independent scholar and publisher Al Fu has asserted that in the realm of autre littérature, or alter literature, he rejects the academic terminology of para-littérature, or popular literature, as something inferior to or beneath literature. Al Fu asserts that readers are loyal foremost to series heroes: Rocambole, Sherlock Holmes, Arsène Lupin, Tarzan, James Bond, Tintin. The heroes of alter literature, he affirms, have a cultural life of their own that surpasses the intentions or talents of their authors. Reader preferences, more than literary merit, Al Fu insists, explains the recurring popularity of fictional characters over the decades and across media forms. And this is what secures their enduring place in cultural patrimony. The persistence of these characters stem from a collectively shared imaginaire, as our colleague Dominique Khalifa has developed that concept over the past two decades in many works on 19th and now 20th century French social and cultural history. While not a substitute for theoretically informed literary criticism, the historical development of popular character types in French crime writing has emerged as a guiding notion in my book in process for a decade and more on shady detectives. The remainder of this paper concerns this final type, the Dark Avenger, as embodied in three characters that span nearly a century of serialized crime fiction: Alexandre Dumas's Count of Monte Cristo, Ponson de Terrail's Rocambole, and Gaston Leroux's Chérie Bibi. These Dark Avengers share features that distinguish them sharply from the sort of social justice and moral restitution justicier we associate with Sue's Rodolphe or Hugo's Jean Valjean. But first, a short tale of vengeance. As is commonly recounted, the inspiration for Dumas's roman feuilleton about the misfortunes of Edmond Dantès and his subsequent incarnation as the malicious avenger, the Count of Monte Cristo, it's great. It's like I can feel it on the roof of my mouth. It came from a curious adventure story by Jacques Pouchet, Parisian lawyer and police administrator during the French Revolution. In Le Diamant et la Vengeance, Pouchet recounted a confabulated anecdote contemporaine about an honest cobbler named François Picot, who in 1807 was falsely accused of being an English spy by three lifelong acquaintances from Nîmes, Mathieu or Gilles Lupien, both names are used in the story, who was a coffee merchant, Gervais Chaubard and Guillaume Solari, and they're assisted by a fourth accomplice, Antoine Allou. Two nights before Picot's impending marriage to the beautiful, modest, and wealthy Marguerite, he is picked up by the police and never heard from again. Rumors circulate. Some say he was imprisoned in the Chateau de Fenestrelle in the Savoy, or perhaps in the Chateau de Luf in Naples, where he either died or vanished in 1811. Others speak of a certain Joseph Luchet, servant to the son of a rich Milanese cleric. Upon the death of his generous benefactor, Luchet received an inheritance of 7 million francs and subsequently discovered a stashed treasure of 12,000 diamonds and an additional 3 million in Milanese ducats, Venetian florins, Spanish quadruples, French louis, and English guineas. Luchet then set up a number of residences in London and in major cities across Europe. 8 years after Picot's arrest and disappearance, in 1815, a certain Abbot Baldini searched out Antoine Allou, one of the co-conspirators who now lived in penury together with his wife as innkeepers. In exchange for a diamond valued between 24,000 and 48,000 francs, Allou agreed to help the abbot find Chaubard, Solari, and Lupien. In Paris, Allou arranges for a café rendezvous with Chaubard and Solari, but the day of the meeting, he's shocked to learn that Chaubard's corpse has been discovered at 5 o'clock that morning on the Pont des Arts, stabbed to death. A hand-printed note in capital letters pinned to Chaubard's arm read, "Number one." Shortly thereafter, in a café on the Rue Saint-Antoine, Solari collapsed on the floor in a convulsive fit and died after having drunk a poisoned beer. 12 hours later, the fatal beer glass was found in front of Solari's lodgings with a message posted to the door, "Number two." The revenge story comes to a climax in a series of misfortunes that befall the rich coffee merchant, Lupien. First, his prized hunting dog is killed with poisoned biscuits, and his wife's favorite parrot dies of poisoned bitter almonds. Next, Lupien's 16-year-old daughter is disgraced by pregnancy, the result of a false marriage to a purportedly refined and wealthy gentleman who turned out to be an escaped convict and has long since split the scene. Then Lupien's dissolute son is caught red-handed, breaking into a liquor store by the police, having been tipped off by his, quote, brother, and is sentenced to 20 years in prison. Finally, the apartments above the coffee business burst into a raging fire. The entire block burns to the ground, and Lupien has to pay all civil and property damages. One evening, in a darkened alleyway of the Tuileries garden, a masked man approaches the utterly ruined Lupien. The man reveals himself as Picot, and the avenger proclaims his part in all the foregoing crimes before stabbing Lupien through the heart with a dagger. His later corpse, discovered corpse, bore the printed message, number 3. For anyone even vaguely familiar with the plot of The Count of Monte Cristo, the parallels are obvious. Picot is transformed into Dantès, Marguerite becomes Mercedes, Caderousse is substituted for Alou, Villefort for Lupien, and so on. Yet Dumas's Roman Feuilleton provided readers with more than 150 pages of embellishment for each page in Pouchet's short story. And in that massive retelling, there are notable modifications. First, the entire backstory adapted from the Pouchet at the beginning of The Count of Monte Cristo, of an honest man betrayed by his friends on the eve of his wedding, falsely convicted and inhumanely imprisoned, befriended by a priest who bequeaths immeasurable wealth to the unfortunate victim, which then miraculously provides him with the means to become a miraculous avenger, a merciless avenger, was due entirely to Dumas's chief ghostwriter, Auguste Maquet. Dumas's silent partner insisted that readers had to first sympathize with the innocent and piteously punished Dantès before they could swallow the innumerable cold-blooded and calculated crimes devised by the Count of Monte Cristo against his personal enemies. Yet even with the inclusion of that prefatory story, over 80% of Dumas's Roman Feuilleton is allocated to the malevolent acts committed by the parvenu count, a preponderance of crimes and killings that vastly surpasses the motivations provided in the backstory. Not only does Dumas' serialized novel devote a disproportionate amount of space to the imperious avenger, The Count of Monte Cristo ends very differently than Pouchet's tale. In the earlier story, co-conspirator Alou captures the murderer, Picot, and in turn becomes a counter-avenger, binding Picot in irons secured to a stone wall and depriving him of food and drink. Alou delivers solemn and melodramatic pronouncements against his captive. "For you, vengeance is only a pleasantry, no doubt. But it's not. It's raging madness. You ought to be horrified by yourself, but you don't understand your demonic spirit. You have committed terrible crimes. You are lost, and you will follow me into the abyss." But Dantès' vengeance in Dumas' interminable Roman Feuilleton is precisely such a pleasantry, cold-blooded crimes and murders dished up solely for the reader's entertainment. The restorative motifs of contrition, confession, and punishment that conclude traditional criminal tales in the Bibliothèque Bleue and continue well into the 18th century in published accounts of the bandits Cartouche and Mandrin yield to the dark liberation of a modern avenger hero. The Count of Monte Cristo metes out tens of thousands of lines of criminal schemes, tortures, brutalities, and killings without repercussion. Escaping detection and punishment, Edmond Dantès leaves great fortunes to his friends and disappears from the scene. The figure of the Dark Avenger established in Dumas' Count of Monte Cristo was recapitulated over the course of the long 19th century, most notable in Pierre-Alexis Ponson de Terrail's La Résurrection de Rocambole, serialized during the Second Empire, and in Gaston Leroux's Chérie Bibi, published in the early 20th century twilight of the roman populaire. I've written and presented on both elsewhere, and there isn't time to deal with them separately today, so I'll conclude by including them in a brief consideration of some possible contours of the imaginaire of the Dark Avenger hero. When considering these three grands justiciers, the following features emerge. First, each has common man origins. Dantès is a Marseille sailor, Rocambole an orphan raised by a hag innkeeper, Chérie Bibi the son of a groundskeeper. Among their later aliases as avengers, at times each is disguised as an aristocrat, but none begins as a prince in disguise, like Gerlastein. Secondly, Each suffers from outrageous misfortunes and is consequently imprisoned and branded a criminal. Dantès is framed for political espionage, then imprisoned and neglected in the Chateau d'If. The adolescent Rocambole is groomed by the genius of evil Sir Williams, is betrayed by a criminal rival, and then arrested and sentenced to hard labor in the Toulon prison. Cheri Bibi is wrongly convicted for the murder of the Marquis du Touché and sentenced to perpetual hard labor in the Bagne. Jean Valjean's criminal convictions as a poacher, reincarcerated for the theft of a loaf of bread, and then living under the burden of the convict's yellow ticket, seem commonplace in by comparison. Third, each achieves the stature of a superman. The inestimably wealthy Count of Monte Cristo is a master of disguise with loyal servants who do his bidding. Rocambole steals the identity of other people, betrays his master Sir Williams, and assumes his place as the head of the leader of a criminal gang. Cheri Bibi possesses physically overpowering physical strength, earning both the fear and respect of the transport convicts he commands. These are men's men with imperious personas. Fourth, ni bien, ni mal, mais moi. Dantès, Rocambole, and Cheri Bibi each deliver criminal vengeance against their enemies for personal reasons, not for purposes of social justice or moral restitution. These are not writers of wrongs, but morally and materialistically opportunistic avenger outlaws. Justice and restitution rarely extend further than one's intimate friends and loyal servants. Fifth, each is a tragic hero. Fatal destiny, no happy endings. Dantès is not reunited with Mercedes, but banishes his previously betrothed and then vanishes into obscurity. Rocambole, after restoring the kidnapped wealthy orphans Antoinette and Madeleine to their fortunes, is fatally run through with a sword to the chest by the treacherous Countess Vasilica. He's resurrected later. Cheri Bibi literally finds himself in the skin of his nemesis, Maxime du Touché, the actual murderer of the Marquis du Touché, and is arrested a second time under that purloined identity, convicted and transported to the Bagne once more. Sixth and finally, each character becomes a figure of French cultural heritage. While not lieu de mémoire in the sense of becoming symbols of French national identity, which is Vinny's bailiwick, the Count of Monte Cristo, Rocambole, and Cheri Bibi have been perpetually recycled through a variety of mass media in France over the course of the 20th and now into the 21st centuries. In novel reissues, movies, telefeuilletons, comics, radio dramas, and now audiobooks. While figures of nostalgia today, their once contemporary contexts and audiences having long since passed, these dark Avengers continue to be heroes in the French popular imagination, if not identity.